Transitions podcast was created to promote individual healing and growth, and to prevent or minimize the depression, anxiety, and frustration that often comes with an LDS faith crisis or awakening. It's my ethical obligation as a licensed psychologist to note that what you're about to hear may sound like psychotherapy, but it's not. It is a practical tool to help you make your journey toward authenticity without sacrificing the best parts of your life. Mormon Transitions is a production of the Open Stories Foundation and relies solely upon the support of people like you, its listeners. To help keep the podcast alive or to become a member of the community, please become a monthly subscriber by visiting mormontransitions.org and clicking on the yellow button on the right side of the page under support. All contributions to Mormon Transitions are completely tax deductible and go towards producing the podcast and building communities and programs of support for Mormons like you. Thanks for your support. Hello and welcome to another episode of Mormon Transitions. I'm your host, Christy Money, and tonight I have with me Ryan McKnight, who helps these videos that we're going to talk about that were leaked of the basically situation briefings to the Quorum of the Twelve and First Presidency. So, Ryan, thank you so much for talking with me tonight.
Not a problem. I'm glad to get the invite.
Well, I imagine you're very busy and you're getting tons of requests locally and nationally to talk to you.
That's very true. Yes, today has been a very interesting day for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a little surreal, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I've spoke to everybody, but everybody from small local news stations all the way to the New York Times. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been a learning experience, really, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I believe it, and I can relate. all right, so you were given the videos confidentially by someone, and we'll definitely talk about them. But first, I don't believe anyone has interviewed you yet about your own faith transition story. So would you be willing to share that story with us?
Sure. Go ahead. I'm more than happy to answer any questions that you have.
Mm-hmm. Okay, sure. Well, first, love to hear about how you felt growing up in the church and mm-hmm. when did things start to change for you? Maybe we can start there.
Sure. I was born into the church right here in Las Vegas, Henderson, Nevada. Grew up, I would say, for the most part, in a typical Mormon family. I think my family would have been seen as quite adherent to the various principles of the church. Not necessarily the most obedient, but definitely more obedient than most. We always tried to go to church on Sundays when we were out of town. We always tried to find a local ward. Definitely all that kind of stuff. The typical Mormon upbringing. Tri mission, I came home, through a series of serendipitous events, which I won't bore anybody with here. I got reconnected with my future wife, and we got married probably about a little over a year after I got home. Started our typical Mormon family, here in Las Vegas, and went about our lives living the typical Mormon journey. I had many callings in the church. At the time when I left the church, I was in the young men's presidency. And basically what happened was when I was 32 years old, and this would have been about a little over 3 years ago. In fact, the last time I went to church was probably late September of 2013. So I started really getting into things late June of 2013.
Okay.
I have a sister and her husband who had left the church and got married outside of the temple, and he's a returned missionary. And nobody, I never really knew why they had left the church. It was kind of one of those things that was kind of never spoken about. And they are not very vocal about it, and so I just kind of never really knew. And somehow I had heard through whatever grapevine my wife had heard that it had something to do with polygamy. And I just couldn't understand how polygamy would be a reason to leave the church. I was aware of polygamy, but I had been taught kind of the very watered down whitewashed version. And even though I kind of, you know, thought there was some weird things about it, I didn't see it as a valid reason to leave the church.
Mm-hmm. So inoculation worked for a time. Sounds like.
Well, yeah, I knew that Joseph Smith was a polygamist, but, you know, I was always taught and bought into the line that very few people did it. It was in order to take care of the poor widows. And, you know, it was done for a very, very short period of time, just as needed. And they had to have special permission to become a polygamist. It wasn't just like a free for all. And I don't know. Yeah. It was a different narrative that what I kind of came to discover later on. But anyway, as I was contemplating one day about how I just couldn't wrap my mind around how somebody could use polygamy as an excuse to leave the church, I Googled something to that effect. You know, I don't remember what it was exactly, but it was something to the effect of, you know, what polygamy and Mormons, or why would somebody leave the church over polygamy? And one of the first things I found was something about the 14, 15-year-old brides of Joseph Smith. Mm. And I immediately assumed that this was an anti-Mormon lie of the internet, and that my brother-in-law must have read this and believed it.
Let me help you.
Yeah, it was kind of like, oh, okay, he read this website, okay. Mm-hmm. And of course, as I read it a little closer, I realized that sources were cited and mm-hmm. links were available, and all roads led back to church-approved sources that mm-hmm. seemed to confirm these teen brides, and I was totally taken aback. I obviously it bothered me, but I was taken aback by the fact that they were teenagers. I was more taken aback that I had gone 32 years without knowing this, because I thought that I knew a lot about church history. I thought I did, but I suppose I never wandered outside of correlated material. So when I realized that I was wrong about the polygamy, or at least the details of it, I naturally started to wonder, what else am I wrong about? Mm-hmm. And obviously, you know, the rabbit hole that took me down.
Sure.
I think the biggest, if I were to pinpoint the biggest issue that bothered me, I would say it was the institutional racism that I discovered while reading the early texts all the way up to 1978. Obviously, I knew that there was an uncomfortable relationship between the church and African Americans prior to 1978, but I was not aware of how institutionalized the racism was. Mm-hmm. And I often wonder how did I not know that? But I guess I just never looked into it. And I don't know that anybody ever explicitly taught this to me, but I always assumed or felt or heard or whatever that, it wasn't a matter of the prophets not wanting to give African Americans the priesthood. It was just that God was not allowing it. And of course, yes. if you read the historical record, that is clearly not the case. Mm-hmm. And this was before the Race and the Priesthood essay, because I believe that came out in December or January of December 13, January 14, somewhere in that time frame. Right. And you know, this is late June, early July, that I'm reading these things, and I was just blown away. And one of the takeaways I had from it was, I felt like if you were to replace the name, let's say Brigham Young or any number of these people that were saying these things, and just take away his name and just read the quote to somebody, many of these quotes, people would assume it was, in my opinion, said by, you know, some grandmaster Ku Klux Klan member. And I felt like the quotes carried that level of hatred in them. And it really, really bothered me. And so that was probably the biggest issue. I had obviously all these issues. You know, the CES letter had not gone viral yet, but I did find that several weeks into my investigation. It wasn't one of the first things that I read, but I think after I was reading a bunch of stuff and watching many of John DeLynn's interviews, and who I had never heard of before that any of this happened. I had no idea who John DeLynn was. Mm-hmm. And the CES letter really tied everything together and really allowed me to put all this stuff that I had been reading into one nice, neat package. And I actually, my mission president, who I mentioned before, you know, we reached out to him, my wife and I did. You know, my wife at the time was open to reading all of these things that I was discovering. Mm-hmm. She wasn't necessarily disputing any of them, but she was trying to take a more, she was having an easier time maintaining her testimony. My testimony was hanging by a thread. And she was a lot more confident than I was that there was an explanation out there. I still had a glimmer of hope, but we got to this point where we reached out to my mission president, and he was gracious enough to spend 2 hours with us on Skype. Mm-hmm. And we had a great conversation, and he allowed me to express myself freely, and he never really interrupted anything I said.
Oh,
and
that's so nice.
Yeah, he said a lot of great things, and he actually mentioned in that interaction at some point that a lot of my questions would be soon answered in a series of essays from the church. So he was obviously in the know about those essays. And he was in the first Quorum of the 70 at the time, as he is now, so it didn't surprise me that he would know something like that. But here's the thing that happened when we finished that conversation. At the very end of the conversation, as I kind of finished going through the big issues that I was having, and he never really had any direct responses to any of my questions. But he said, you know, it seems like you've done a lot of great research. I can't dispute anything you've said. As far as I know, you know, everything you said is true, you know. Mm-hmm. And he said, really, though, you know, there's no answers out there for you other than the answer that you will get from the Holy Ghost telling you that the church is true. And so he was basically saying, you know, it all relies on faith is basically what he was saying. And I said to him, I said, President, I can appreciate where you're coming from, but that is no longer going to work for me. And the reason is, and I actually asked him to open up his scriptures.
Oh.
About 2 weeks prior to this conversation, somebody was giving a talk in our church, and they referenced the definition of faith in the Bible dictionary. Mm-hmm. And it was a very powerful definition when I heard them read it on the pulpit. And so I asked them to open up to that. And I can't quote it for you right now, but I can paraphrase it. And the listeners, if they want, they can go and look it up. I believe it's the second paragraph that says something to the effect of, perfect faith requires correct knowledge. And I said, that doesn't mean that we have to know everything, but what we know has to be correct in order for our faith to be true. And I said, my faith for the last 32 years has been based on lies. And I no longer can rely on any of those spiritual experiences that I've had and will never deny that I had. But they now have a different meaning for me. And when I reevaluate my faith based on what I believe to be the correct knowledge now, I no longer have those feelings, and I no longer can bring myself to believe. And if any of that changes going forward with new information, I'm more than happy to consider it. But the idea that I just need to have faith no longer works. Mm. And he said something like, he loves me and he's going to pray for me and he will always love me no matter what. And I appreciated all that. And I think I even teared up a little bit at the time. Mm-hmm. Because I really did feel his love. And I'm almost a little bit tearing up right now about it. But,
Oh, Ryan, wow. That's such a gift to say that.
I do have a lot of respect for this man, even though I believe at this point that he is 100% wrong in his religious persuasions and probably his opinion of me. I'm guessing he probably does not have a very high opinion of me anymore, especially after what has happened this week, if he didn't already. And, I'm okay with that. I believe that his heart is in the right place, and I believe that if any of the general authorities are in the know and actively deceiving us, I don't believe he is one of them. Mm-hmm. And I hope that I'm not wrong in that, but that is my assessment of him. Mm-hmm. And so I hold him in great esteem still to this day.
Oh, Ryan, thank you so much for sharing this story. No problem.
Yeah. So just to wrap that whole thing up, we built a house out here and moved into a new stake when all just after this conversation, which turned out to be a very nice way for me to really decide if I wanted to continue going to church, because it was a whole new stake and everything. And we were in our previous ward for 8 years, and there was a lot of strong relationships there. And I attempted to go to church with my wife for about 3 weeks, and my initial plan was to help her with the kids at church, attend sacrament meeting, and then at the time my two youngest were too young for nursery even, and I was going to take care of them in the hallway while my wife attended the other classes. And on about the third week, somebody got – I don't know if it was a testimony or if it was a talk, but somebody got up and started to talk about how Joseph Smith was such a great, honest, pure – you know, go on and on and on with the superlatives. And for the first time in my life, I began to shake and have an anxiety attack, and I could not take it. And I said to my wife afterwards, I said, I cannot come to church anymore. It's too painful. I was going through so much pain at the time emotionally with this whole, you know, not believing in the church anymore. And to hear these things that I knew were just not accurate just was pouring salt on the wound. And luckily she was very open to that. And I told her, I said, I'll keep the boys at home. I'll have the house clean for you when you get back. I'll have the food ready. And you know, she was definitely on board. And luckily fast forward another, you know, 8 or 9 months, and she ended up studying her own way out. So it all was a happy ending from my perspective. And I've since gotten over the vast majority of that emotional pain that we all go through when we first leave the church. Sometimes it does come back, but for the most part, I've gotten over it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good to hear for people who might be in the thick of it right now. That
it gets better. It does get better.
Yeah, there can be some waves sometimes, especially around anniversaries or special events. Yes. Kind of like the death of a loved one will do similar, have similar patterns with grief. But yeah, that's a fascinating story.
If you have any other questions or anything, I'm more than happy to answer. But that's pretty much, you know, the general overview and actually a lot of details. So, I don't know if you have any follow-up questions on any of that. But
okay, well, probably more will come up, and we can talk about it, the recording and all. But your story really is fascinating to me, but okay. So Ryan, let's talk about the videos. You received these from an anonymous source, right?
Yes, that's okay. Correct.
So
I don't know who they are.
Okay. And I believe you. So so what was your first reaction or your first thoughts when you saw them?
Well, first of all, prior to them being leaked at 7, I think I released the videos at 7 a.m. Utah time on Sunday morning. And I received them late Saturday.
Okay.
So I didn't really have time to go through all of them. And the leaker was hoping that I would be able to post them by general conference. I was kind of trying to do that. I watched all of the shorter videos, all the, like the 10-minute and under ones. And I was not able to watch the longer ones, although I have since then. And, you know, initially, and it still kind of is, my favorite one, I don't know if favorite is the right word, but the most fascinating one, I believe, is the WikiLeaks one. And not just because of the irony that a WikiLeaks briefing video was leaked, but because there's a little bit of irony there, but more so because, you know, this gentleman Garrett Gong, who I'm really not even sure who he is, but apparently he's a general authority, is what I've learned since these videos. But I had never really recognized him before. You know, he gave a pretty good overview of WikiLeaks and you know, how something like that could affect the church. And he mentioned, you know, Chelsea Manning, and they used the name Bradley. I don't know if Bradley Manning had become Chelsea Manning at that point.
I don't think he had.
Okay, so, you know, maybe we won't beat them up too much about using the name Bradley, but they, you know, he mentioned Bradley Manning and Julian Assange sort of, in my opinion, it was kind of a subtext of the whole briefing, just to sort of give an example of what WikiLeaks had done, you know, saying, hey, these, you know, Julian Assange, who runs WikiLeaks, had coordinated with Bradley Manning in order to leak all of these documents. And when it came time for the comment section, when I see the literally the only thing they talked about was the sexuality of not only Bradley Manning, but they wondered whether or not Julian Assange was gay, homosexual.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe it. I just thought, you know, what does any of this have to do with anything? Here we are talking about something that is actually a real concern to the church, which is its, you know, security in regards to its confidential information. And all these men care about is the sexuality of the two men involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I don't know if I'm over. I don't know if I'm oversimplifying things or not, but it just really, really stood out to me as them being completely out of touch.
Yeah, that one was that one was hard for me to watch too, and especially when they, I think they asked Brother Gong if he was they said, is he gay? Said, no, he's not. But somehow it came out that he was accused of rape, and they were like, well.
Yeah, they didn't really mention that. Well, and then also the Oaks comment about how, in his opinion, I don't know the exact words he used, but he said something to the effect of how he's convinced that the media is in some sort of a cover-up with the quote-unquote homosexual agenda to cover up anything that would shed a negative light on the so-called homosexual agenda. And that stood out to me because I think that's probably – we could probably use that as a pretty good gauge as how he really feels about homosexuals, as opposed to what the church has attempted to do over the last 10 or 15 years or whatever the time period is of publicly trying to be more moderate on these social issues as much as they can within their taught doctrine. I don't think that Oaks would ever say anything like that in public. Definitely if he knew that he was being recorded or something like that, he would never say anything like that. And I think that I think his true colors were shown, which is fine. I'm not suggesting that he's not allowed to think that there's a homosexual agenda. He is definitely allowed to think that. I don't think it lines up with the public image that the church is trying to portray.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe the rhetoric, maybe now we can say that the rhetoric that we hear in regards to matters of LGBT issues is simply rhetoric and nothing more. Can we definitively say that based on this video? No, but I think that the burden of proof is now in their court to prove that they actually care.
Right. And combine what we heard in the videos with the November policy. And it's just all when you, in his 1984 briefing about the plan to fight the gay agenda, which they've been pretty consistent with. I mean, it hasn't really changed since 1984 that.
Yeah, but I do think, and I don't know if you would agree with me or not, but I do think that prior to the November policy, that whether true or not, there was a perception that the church was at least softening their stance on homosexuality.
Yeah.
Not that they were about to accept it, but they it almost seemed like they were trying to stop talking about it as much. And maybe I'm wrong on that, but I felt like they were, and I know a lot of other people felt they were, and I think the November policy like wiped out any of those hopes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That's my perception of things. I could be off though on that.
No, I had a similar perception too. I was really hopeful. I was an idealist and really, looking forward to better days to come. And then November just devastated me and so many others.
Yeah, the other video that stood out to me initially was the one on marijuana, and
the so-called marijuana or so-called drug.
So-called medical marijuana, I think is what he said.
Yes,
right?
That is. Thank you.
I think that's what he said.
I saw the air quotes in my head, you know.
It's like the so-called intellectuals, the so-called lesbians, the so-called homosexual agenda. I don't know what they got a lot of so-calleds over there.
Yeah, that did give me a chuckle.
What really stood out there, again, the comments, you know, for anybody that hasn't watched the videos yet, the videos will put you to sleep.
Oh, yeah.
But can
They're
make
pretty
it
boring.
But if you can make it to the comments, that is where all the action is.
Mm-hmm.
And they do not disappoint. But I thought it was funny how out of touch they seem when it comes to the marijuana. It's almost as if they have no idea what marijuana actually is. And it seemed like not just one of them, but on multiple occasions in the comments, they seem to equate marijuana with meth as if they were on the same playing field.
Mm-hmm.
I think the very first comment was from Packer, and he told some story about meth. And he didn't say it like, oh, I know this has nothing to do with what we're talking about, but let me show you. No, he shared the story as if it was within context of what they were talking about. And then there was another comment from somebody, I don't remember who said it, about how nowadays it's so easy for housewives to cook meth on their kitchen, what did he say, like on their stovetop or something like that.
Oh.
So I don't know, maybe they're watching too much TV. But the thing I took away from that was that to them, I think that there's no difference between meth and marijuana is my guess.
Mm-hmm.
And that would just take me to this comment. I think that for non-members and for former members, I think there's two big takeaways from these videos. I think the first one is it's just more evidence that the church is run more like a business than a church. And number two, these men are completely out of touch with reality. I think non-Mormons and ex-Mormons alike would see that. Now, I think a faithful Mormon would look at these videos and probably say, and I know I've seen some say this online, they would say something like, I'm proud to know that my church leaders are working so hard to stay on top of relevant issues. And I guess that's one way to look at it. But to me, that's completely ignoring the fact that they're absolutely out of touch with reality in their comments and their questions. And especially in the one presentation about the Kurds in Iraq and all this optimism that they were expressing about how, you know, in the near future, the Kurds will surely, you know, be open to the gospel. You know, that to me, it sounded like some really, really deep delusion there.
Yeah, and I mean, these sessions, these briefings did not seem to me like they were, you know, very informational, like we're going to teach you new information and hopefully, you know, you'll learn from it or change your mind. Because I mean, the power dynamic to me, I mean, from a psychologist's point of view, like it was very clear who the authority figures were. It was the people who were absorbing, you know, the talk. It wasn't, you know, the other way around. And so, you know, I could see that, I mean, in a way it seemed, these felt to me, I mean, it was just my impression that these were more of loyalty tests too.
Yeah. Well, do you think they have ever had somebody come in to one of these briefings and talk to them from a perspective that was completely opposite of what they believed so they could get the other side? We don't know, but I'd be surprised.
Given that they are the authority figures and, you know, they're inviting these people in who then, you know, impression.
It's a big echo chamber is what it
is. Right. Yeah. An echo chamber. And then if they, you know, appreciated and what they heard resonated with what they already believed, then
yeah.
These people become 70s.
Yeah. I hope that what we all can agree on, members and former members and non-members, is I hope that we can all agree on that it, at a minimum, these videos are essentially a peek behind the curtain. It's an opportunity that has, well, some have said it's never happened before. I don't know if that's true or not, but maybe it's an opportunity that's never happened before to take a peek at what at least part of their day-to-day life is like. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, unless you have one of those special invites to sit behind them in the audience. But so I think that at a minimum, the videos are valuable in that sense to get a view. And that doesn't have to be a negative or a positive comment. You could look at this peek behind the curtain and say that it strengthens your testimony somehow if you want to look at it that way. I don't necessarily see anything inherently wrong with that. I would disagree with it, but I don't necessarily think that that's a bad thing to do. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's kind of like being able to be a fly on the wall for a moment and getting a peek at how these guys operate in their day-to-day lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Gordon Smith one, you know, unfortunately, I didn't watch that one before I released them. Had I watched it, I may have waited on releasing them and had actually gone to the media first. But, you know, that obviously opened up a whole nother can of worms with him talking about. Now, the whole thing about the classified information, I have a feeling that has been a little bit overblown. I don't know how classified that information that he shared was, but I do think that it's troubling that he was willing to share something that he thought might be classified more than the actual information that he shared. But I think even more troubling than that was his obvious preference to the church over his constituents. You know, he said something to the effect of his temple recommend is more valuable to him than his, I don't know the word he used, his Senate election certificate or whatever it is he said, and how his staff is constantly trying to help the church or however he phrased it.
Yeah, he said they were church broke.
Church broke, yeah, and that they're, you know, they're always eagerly awaiting the phone calls to find out what their next project is or whatever. I don't know. And he's not even a senator from Utah. If he was a senator from Utah, I'd almost cut him some slack because you could make the argument that his constituents might actually be in agreement with the church's interest. But he's a senator from Oregon. I mean, what? I don't think the Oregonians would appreciate that very much, I would assume. And the other thing, obviously, that he said that was troubling was that he voted for the Iraq War largely because of how it would help the church and how it would help open doors for the church. And I thought to myself, you know, that should upset anybody, no matter what side of the aisle you're on. If you supported the Iraq War, still support it, or did support it, or whatever, it should still trouble you that somebody voted for it based on those reasons. Mm-hmm. The idea that somebody would choose reasons to go to war other than the actual issues that are at hand, regarding national security and, you know, world peace and things like that, the idea that you would use some sort of outside barometer to measure whether or not you should vote for the war, to me, is very troubling. And I could only imagine what it would have been like had this tape come out prior to the 2012 election. My guess is that Mitt Romney would have lost in a landslide, because I know that it was a big concern back then. I remember that a big concern was, will he separate his presidency from his religion? And mm-hmm. While we can't say that he thinks just like Gordon Smith does, the fact that we now have proof that at least one Mormon politician is willing to think that way, for better or for worse, it casts a shadow of doubt on every Mormon politician.
Yeah, that really troubled me when he said that about the Iraq War. I couldn't believe it. To spread the church's message, let's go to war. No!
And like I said, even if you were a supporter of the war, that should trouble you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, and I mean, I'm not. I'm a pacifist. But even so, like, I can see, like, I can empathize with how that could be troubling for someone. Okay. So you let me just switch gears a little bit. You mentioned in the Trib article that just came out tonight that your goal is for the church to become more transparent. So do you think that this leak will help, or do you think it'll backfire and the church will just crack down more?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to help as far as the church voluntarily becoming transparent. If anything, it's going to cause them to clamp down. I've been told by a couple sources I have inside the church that they're on high alert right now.
Yeah.
In regards to sensitive information potentially getting out. So, and that kind of started about a week and a half ago or so when there was an anonymous Redditor who I'm also working with that released, about 60 documents, I think he's released. And, ever since then, they've been on high alert. And whether or not that's justified or not, I suppose time will tell. But, I don't see the church voluntarily becoming more transparent, because I don't think they have anything to gain by it. Worst case scenario, let's talk about financial transparency, for example, which would probably be anybody who wants transparency, that would be their number one want, right?
Yeah.
If the church were to make their books transparent, and it turns out that everything is above board, which is entirely possible, I don't think there would be a bunch of former Mormons rushing to get reactivated or rebaptized.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Probably not.
Because I don't think anybody – while some people may have church finances as a bullet point on their lists of reasons why they've left the church, I don't think anybody has left the church solely because of a lack of transparency.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't gain anything by showing the world a clean set of books. And in a worst case scenario, if there are shenanigans going on, they stand to lose a great number of members. So because the equation is at no point a positive equation for them, I don't see any incentive for them to be transparent. So to answer, that's a very long-winded question answer to your question. The answer is no, I don't think they will be more transparent. Do I think more people are going to come out of the woodwork? I have zero doubt. Mm-hmm. Ever since the November policy leak, which I played a small role in, some would say bigger than others, I say a small role, I've been contacted at least once a month, sometimes as much as twice a month, by people who claim to be either current members or current employees or former employees who have something that they want to get out there. And after it became known that I was working with this anonymous person that leaked all of these 60 documents online, which is not the same person that leaked the videos, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
After people realized that I was working with this guy, I think since then I've gotten like 10 people that have contacted me, one of them being this person with the videos. And I've received a couple of other things, and to be perfectly honest with you, none of them are really that interesting. Mm-hmm. And I haven't really released any of them, and honestly, I don't even know if I will. I don't know if I have time, because I'm working with this other guy on this other matter. We're working with the media. Mm-hmm. To try to bring this other thing, to see if there's any kind of story with what he has. So a lot of times what happens when people contact me is what they tell me is sometimes not as interesting as they think it is.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's very interesting, but they have zero proof. And so there's really not much there. I have been given some rumors from inside the church, from people that I trust, that I believe them to the extent that they believe what they're telling me is true. And in those cases, I've sometimes shared some tidbits on Reddit. Mm-hmm. So just as an example, one of the things I shared on Reddit, and again, I cannot confirm that this is true, but it comes from a source that I trust. There's a new hard copy manual, Church Handbook of Instructions, coming out, which is not a surprise or anything. Apparently they come out with a new hard copy version every 7 years or so.
Right.
And so they're due for a new one. And it's currently going through the vetting phase right now through correlation and all this stuff. And apparently there is a internal struggle going on right now among the powers that be on how to deal with the November policy. There are people that want to scrap it completely, and I'm talking at the top. Hmm. People that want to scrap it completely, there are people that want to alter it significantly, and there are people that want to keep it the same. How that will flesh out, time will tell. But the word that I'm getting is that there's a decent chance that there's going to be a change to the wording. I don't know if that's going to come out. I don't want listeners to think that this is like a done deal. And those that follow me on Reddit know that this has already been discussed on Reddit a couple of weeks ago. But I just tell that just to give you an example of sometimes some of the things that I get. The lineup of all the speakers for General Conference. I got that about a week before conference, I think.
Yeah, you could play a fun game with someone if they didn't know that you were in Reddit. Like, I predict so and so.
I've actually had people tell me that they messed with their family on that one, and their family was like, "How did you know?" They would say like one of the random names. Like if you say, "Oh, Elder Packer," well, okay, you guessed it right. But they would say like one of the random names of one of the 70 that's going to speak or whatever. They'll say something like, "Oh, I can't wait to hear so and so speak today." And like, "Who's that?" Oh, I don't know. I'm sure he'll speak today. I just have a feeling that he will. You know,
I have a burning in my bosom.
And the person that gave me that list also had access to the actual talks, because you know the talks get sent out to the translators. And I was really hoping they would offer me that. I try to never ask anybody to give me anything. I don't want to really fall into that trap of like fishing for stuff. When people come to me and tell me they have something, I just simply say, well, if you want to send it to me, I can help you strategize on how to best get it out there. But I try not to ever solicit anything particular, because I don't think that's really a road that I want to go down. And it's the case in these videos completely came to me and they were offered to me, and you know, they were obviously worried about, they mentioned that it would be a violation of a non-disclosure agreement, which sounds reasonable to me. They were worried about, they specifically said they were worried about the strengthening the church members committee finding out who they are. That was, I think, the exact line they said in one of the emails to me. So I actually have no way to contact the person who leaked the videos anymore. On Sunday evening, I don't remember which media outlet it was, but somebody asked me if they would be willing to do an interview. And I said, you know, I don't think so, but I'll ask. And so I sent them an interview and I said, or I sent them an email and I said, hey, you know, media wants to talk to you if you want to talk. And the email came back to me as being a disabled email. So they used a fake email address and then disabled it after sending me the videos. So at this point, I mean, there's literally no way for me to know who it was, which I suppose is a good thing. You know, it protects everybody.
Sure. And if there were any doubt, anyone who's listening, Ryan is not the leaker. This is obviously a different person.
Yeah, I mean, hey, if the church thinks I'm the leaker and they want to try to take legal action against me, they're more than welcome to. They would be sorely disappointed when my computer is inspected and it's and the computer experts confirm that I actually received these emails. I still have obviously all the emails and everything.
Sure, of course.
But I have no way of. I wouldn't even know how to get these videos, even if I wanted to. I mean, I've never worked for the church, and I don't know enough about computers to even to do anything, really, other than I know how to use the internet and email. Play some video games with my kids and things like that, but I'm not a computer nerd, so I'm not a hacker.
And you're not aware of the cyber, right? That's a debate joke for anyone who's listening to this, after the fact.
I don't even get the joke, but yeah, okay. That just shows you how out of touch I am with that world.
Yeah, it was something Trump said. Oh, anyway, okay. So. Yeah.
Well, that might be one thing I'm in line with Trump on. I don't know about the cyber. If that's what he said, yeah, I'm with him on that one.
Yeah. Anyway, so as not to derail to talk about my feelings about Donald Trump, let me say this. So now that the videos are out there, I imagine that there's a pretty natural impulse to want to share it with others, or pull back the curtain, like we talked about earlier. So because this is a practically focused podcast, we're here to help people. So I think we might want to talk through for a sec the implications of doing this, of sharing this, with other people. I mean, I'm not talking about the initial leak, which, as we talked about earlier, this sunshine is the best disinfectant. I'm totally on board with that. But just in terms of, sending it to other people, like, hey, look at this. And I think it's important to discuss some human cognitive processes, like the backfire effect. We mentioned that a little earlier too, and how it's really hard to change someone's mind if the belief you're trying to change is rooted in someone's identity and their religious beliefs. And like we were saying earlier with the situation briefings themselves, like my impression was definitely that these weren't so much trying to get new information as to help, solidify, and reinforce opinions that these leaders already had. And to be fair, I mean, it's confirmation bias. We all do it. It's just, we're not running the church. So, there's some important differences there, but in terms of maybe an empathy experiment, we all want information that mm-hmm. confirms our existing beliefs, and pay more attention to that, selective attention. Anyway, do you have time for that? Do you think that would be helpful? Because I imagine you're just getting bombarded with questions, and a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, to your first point mm-hmm. about the implications that have. Well, it's not just implications. It's not only implications that it would have on believing members, or the lack of implications that it would have. But, people have to think about, if you're breaking a non-disclosure agreement, which in most cases I would imagine anybody who leaks something to me or anybody else would be, I would guess that if the church found out who you are, they would spare no expense to come after you. If you contact me anonymously and never tell me who you are, that's fine. I have no way of finding out who you are. That doesn't mean the church will never find out who you are.
That's important to keep in mind.
Yeah. Sure. I hope I don't say that to I don't mean to tell people don't leak something if you think it's important. If you think something's important and you think it's the right thing to do, have at it. I'm not going to tell you to do it or to not do it. But just don't – you must think of the overarching implications. And if it's a big enough leak, like what might end up happening with this this anonymous person that is – was leaking all those 60-plus docs, if his story ends up being as big as we think it is going to be, it's going – eventually I would guess he's going to be found out who he is. I would guess. I don't know. I don't even know who he is. I don't know his real name, let's just say. Mm-hmm. I would expect that the church spares no expense in trying to find out who these people are. And if you are found out, don't be surprised. Now, as far as, is it breaking the law? I'm not a lawyer. I don't know. It's possible though, that if you take some of these documents, it's possible that you've broken the law. So that's something to consider as well. So I don't want to encourage anybody to do anything that's illegal mm-hmm. Against a non-disclosure agreement. But each person who has access to whatever data they have access to, they have their own conscience, and they know whether or not something that the right thing to do is to leak it. And I think that, for example, the person who sent me the names of the conference talks people. I think that's why they didn't send me the conference talks, because I think they felt that they were not worthy of a leak, and they were not worthy of them, at a minimum breaking their non-disclosure agreement and at a maximum breaking the law. But I think that if somebody were to stumble across, let's say, proof positive of financial shenanigans, that equation may flip. But again, I want to reiterate that I'm not going to be the person to tell them whether or not that equation has flipped. They will have to make that decision on their own and live with whatever the consequences are. So I don't know how harsh that came off or whatever, but I do think it's important that people understand that leaking this kind of stuff is not like child's play or just like sending somebody an email and saying, have fun with this. There's definitely serious implications. And I think it is also important to what you had mentioned about how, you know, things are not necessarily going to have as big of effect as you think on members. Listen, you cannot convince anybody that the church is not true. And anybody who has tried to convince a friend or family member of that after they have left the church knows exactly what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. The only time a person is going to stop believing in the church is when they are ready to stop believing in the church. And who knows what gets them to be ready. It's probably a different trigger for everybody. But if you think that you're going to tell your parents or your friends or your wife some piece of bombastic information that was just leaked on the internet, and they are all of a sudden going to say, oh, okay, the church isn't true then you're living in a delusion. Now, maybe there would be a piece of information out there that was so extreme that it would cause somebody. But the chances of a piece of information like that to being out there are slim to none. I mean, if we found out that that the apostles were all having a nightcap at the local strip club or something like that after their meetings, maybe something like that would cause every day. But I don't think that that's going to ever be leaked.
Yeah.
So it's important to put things – it's important to take a step back. And I try to do this with anything, but especially with this information that people send to me. And take a step back and say, what exactly does this document say? And what would the response to the church be? And what would the response from a believing member, you know, and realize that it's probably not nearly as dramatic as you think it is in your mind?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And I mean, the mind is a complex thing. I've said this before. That's not a computer the same way. You input leads to output. If you, that people will all of a sudden see, oh, okay, well, Here's this new fact. Okay, you know, I'm done. It is so much more complicated, and I'm planning on doing an episode on this in the next couple weeks about not just confirmation bias, but how completely resistant our minds are to accepting new information that contradicts our identity, our core identity, the way religion and the church does, and that if there's any hope, and again, we don't have time to talk about this now, but that if there's any hope, it involves, you just letting people know that you trust their judgment, and that, you know, you're a safe person to talk to, and that you're just to self-affirming statements, tend to work, if anything. And, and, you know, as fate would have it, that's also just a really nice way to treat people. You know, that's
golden rule. Well, yeah, and at the end of the day, and I actually made a post about something like this on Reddit today. I was thinking about this. Mm-hmm. You know, we should not, as former Mormons, we should not have a burning desire for everybody to leave the church. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we get excited when we hear that somebody that we know leaves the church. I'm not suggesting that we shouldn't get excited about that. But our goal in life should not be to convince our friends and loved ones to leave the church. What I think we all want, deep down, if we get down to it, is we want to be validated and treated as equals.
Yes.
And I mm-hmm. think that if I'm friends with an active member of the church, and I would like to maybe express my feelings that I'm having about a particular aspect of the church, if they're going to react like the words I'm saying is an immediate threat to their precious testimony, and they don't want to even engage beyond the first word of the conversation, it's not going to end well. But mm-hmm. if the believing member is willing to listen and engage and actually discuss, they don't have to agree with me. There's no need to say, yeah, you're right, the church is not true. All you need to do is say, you know what? That's an interesting perspective. I can kind of see how you would reach that conclusion. I've reached a different conclusion, but I think you're more than welcome to have your conclusion.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Ryan. Mm-hmm. I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, can you imagine if our conversations with Mormons went like that? There would be no Mormon versus ex-Mormon community. It would not exist. And, you know, somebody who I consider him to be my best friend. I don't know if he considers me to be his best friend, but I'm sure he's going to listen to this podcast, and he probably knows who he is as soon as I say that. But he's a believing active member, and it's not to say that he doesn't think there's any issues in the church, but he has a testimony in the truthfulness of the church, and he believes the church is a net good in his life. And we often talk about difficult things with the church, and we enjoy those conversations, and I'm very blunt with him, and I believe he's very blunt with me. And but at the end of the day, he doesn't think that I'm less of a man for having left the church, and I don't think he's less of a man for not leaving the church like I did.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't say that for the rest, for probably any other relationship that I've had with Mormons, you know, prior to me leaving the church. I think he's the only person that I've ever really been able to have honest conversations with, and not feel like he feels threatened, and not afraid that I'm going to offend him, and I would hope that he feels the same in return.
Mm-hmm. Oh. So. Ryan, thank you so much for sharing that story with your friend. That is my sincere hope for everyone to have such a friend and to be such a friend. Like I've talked to clients a lot about, you know, exploring the idea of, you know, modeling the kind of behavior you'd like to see,
yes,
from your friends yourself. And then to see, you know, how it goes to, you know, be unconditionally listening and accepting, yeah, you know, and even though you disagree and, mm-hmm, say, okay, yeah, I don't agree with that, but you know, I can see where you're coming from, right? You know, just like you said, that is.
Well, you know what happens? What happens in most cases is that you say something, or you begin to say something, and the Mormon then says, completely shuts down, or rejects, or doesn't want to engage, or passively aggressively insults. And then what ends up happening is that the former Mormon goes off on a rant because of it. And they end up looking like a fool arguing with the wall, and the Mormons point to that to say, you see, we told you that they were nothing but bitter ex-Mormons.
Mm-hmm.
And all of that could have been avoided if you would just listen.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, we're not going to save the world here today, Christy.
No, we're not. We're not. But I do want to help. And I think your anecdote is really helpful. One other thing before okay, we end, I just wanted to bring this up from one of the videos is, when they were briefed about young adults leaving activity, it was interesting to know how the conversation went to the parents. Like, well, you know, the parents need to work harder. So my thoughts, and I hope I'm wrong, but is that there's a natural tendency to look to causes they have control over for everyone. Everyone does this, like I've said earlier. And sadly, I think parental shame is a huge motivator that they know, maybe unconsciously that they know, but they know, that they have some sway in that. So, maybe even, you know, for an empathy experiment, maybe they know this from personal experience from their own childhoods. You know, that's why I'm a shrink. You know, this is where my mind goes, you know,
yeah,
tell me about your childhood. Anyway, I bring this up, and you know, I want to talk about this in another episode I'm doing this week about, you know, conference. You know, only to the extent, you know, because I don't really want to hash conference to death, but I think that transitioning Mormons have a right to know what's being said about them, and if I can, you know, provide some tools to help people deal with what was said productively and preserve relationships, you know, I'm going to keep on trying to my dying day. So, my take on that segment of the video is that, I think it's important when we're going through, you know, the anger phase of the transition that you mentioned you'd had, earlier on, you're not feeling that so much now, but, with that anger, to realize and pinpoint where that anger is coming from, like really examine it so that it's not generalized and, you know, has the potential to get aimed at, you know, anything that moves, you know, like church members, family and such, you know. And I definitely think relationships can be preserved to some extent when clients can pinpoint where that anger is coming from. Like in some situations, the anger at loved ones could really predominantly be anger at the institution for training their loved ones to be church broke, you know.
Sure.
that you know, for those who haven't heard that phrase before, I hadn't until recently, the church broke, referring to like horses being broken, that you're, you get church broke, that you're completely obedient. Anyway, I think, you know, one of the main ways these parents receive the messages of what to do and how to treat us is from conference, which is then published on the inside. And then those get used by leaders locally as sacrament talks, you know, correlation makes it in the curriculum and so on. So, that said, I mean, did you watch that video? Do you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think I would echo everything you just said. And I think that, we see many examples online where people share their stories and they talk about how one of their parents expresses extreme guilt over the fact that their child has left the church. I don't necessarily have that experience in my own life. I mean, my parents may feel guilty about the fact that I've left the church, but if they do, it's never been expressed to me. But yeah, people, I know people that have had that said to them. And like you said, whether it's consciously a part of the narrative or subconsciously part of the narrative is definitely there. And it starts with, isn't there a scripture that says that parents are responsible for, you know, the education of their children up to a certain age or something, maybe the age of baptism or something like that. I can't remember. Or maybe it's even beyond that. I think there's a scripture that references that. Maybe it's up to adulthood, maybe. I don't know. But, you know, there's definitely some pressure there that if you have a child that ends up not going on a mission, what is it that you did wrong that they weren't ready for that?
Yeah.
And that's unfortunate because –
it breaks my heart.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, are we not all our own man? I mean, when I become an adult, am I not now making decisions on my own? And yeah, of course, my upbringing influences those decisions. But if I make a bad decision, I would not want people to automatically assume that it reflects poorly on my parents. Mm-hmm. I hope that it wouldn't. I suppose you could point to some specific cases where an upbringing was such a situation that promoted unhealthy behaviors as an adult. But I don't think that's the automatic, and it shouldn't be the automatic assumption.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it often is. And I don't know what the solution to that is, other than a complete shift in rhetoric from the top. I do know there has been some articles here and there in the Ensign that has discussed this topic and mentioned that parents should not feel guilty, but I don't think it's been enough to where it's really resonated with your average member.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me neither, but here's hoping, because we really need that. In the meantime, you know, I'll just say, you know, just as a quick story, my husband, when he talked to his parents, he mentioned that it was because of their good parenting. You know, because they raised him right, they loved him unconditionally, and they taught him to be an independent thinker, that's, you know, why he is the independent thinker he is today. And that's, you know, what led him, you know, out of orthodoxy. But he's grateful to them for loving him so unconditionally, that if I really admired how he went about that.
I think I would say something similar to that. I mean, I think that, you know, my parents definitely instilled, honesty in me and, you know, trying to always do the right thing and you know, well, maybe they don't think I'm doing the right thing right now, but at least I'm doing what I think is the right thing. And hopefully that, hopefully that's enough. The fact that I'm doing what I think is right.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to, you know what? Somebody just posted something on earlier today on Reddit about this. So they say that their dad posted this meme on Facebook and it was, "Don't be ashamed of who you are. That's your parents' job." And this person took this as a jab at them, kind of like what you're saying, that the parents are saying that they're ashamed of their child and the decisions that they've made. And, you know, I don't know if this person's father was trying to crack a joke by posting this or not, but the poster did not take it as a joke.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, that's a toxic attitude to have towards things.
Yeah, hopefully maybe one person at a time we can help heal this as parents and kids.
Yeah,
you talk openly and authentically with each other, and maybe take out the middleman that is shame from the church. You know, like let's take that out of the equation. That is so much easier said than done. It really breaks my heart to hear about parents being used in that way. Okay, so I really want to talk about the Underground Handcart Company that you founded and that you run it. I think it's amazing.
Okay.
Can you give us a brief synopsis and
yes.
with a promise that you will come back and we'll talk about this more? I'm going to use the commitment pattern on you. Do you commit to coming back on with you?
Yeah. You know what? I enjoy doing these types of things, mm-hmm. these podcast types of things. So I will come back anytime you ever want to invite me for anything. I will be more than happy to participate as long as my schedule allows it. I don't want to get into all the details because I know we've probably, at this point, people are probably wondering when we're going to finish this whole thing up. But, I appreciate you saying that that the Underground Handcart Company is great. I hope it becomes great. I don't know if it's great yet. We're very new. Yes.
Right now.
Yes. And I do think it is a great idea. And this idea was simply born from the fact that I kept seeing people post online about how they were stuck in a life of financial dependency on their parents for one reason or another. And they were, unable to be who they really are because they were afraid to tell their parents they didn't believe in the church anymore because they felt like they're going to get kicked out or something. So I finally said, there's got to be something that we can do to help these people out. And so the idea was, I mean, we'll try to help anybody that contacts us. So I don't want to like try to pigeonhole who our prospective, client, if you will. I don't know what word to say other than client, but mm-hmm. we don't charge for anything that we do. So don't get the wrong idea, listeners. But, if somebody, the idea is that let's say a young adult from 18 to let's say 24 who already doesn't believe in the church. And that's key. One of the stated missions of the Underground Handcart Company is to not try to convince people that the church is not true. That is not what this platform is for.
Mm-hmm.
I will only engage with people who already do not believe in the church. There are plenty of things online that can lead you down a path to not believe in the church, and we're just not one of them. So it's people who don't believe in the church, and they're stuck in a dependency, typically financially, but it doesn't have to be, and they need help getting out of it. And a lot of times, you know, sometimes when we're a little older, you know, I'm in my mid-30s, and people maybe that are, you know, even older than me, you know, sometimes we forget what it was like when we were 18 and 19 and how much we didn't know,
mm-hmm.
you know, and sometimes people just don't know how to get out. I mean, they don't know that maybe they can apply for grants on FAFSA and maybe get some money to go to college. So as an example,
right.
you know, or they don't know how to do it, or they just need somebody to really motivate them and tell them that things are going to get better. But right now, you know, I've have people that have gone to our website, which is undergroundhandcartcompany.com, and you can sign up to be a volunteer there. And I have a database of volunteers, and I also have a secret Facebook group. There's a public Facebook group that I would encourage everybody to like and follow. And if you want to be a part of the secret Facebook group, you can contact me, and I'll vet you. And when I'm satisfied that you're that it's appropriate, I'll add you to that group. Basically, mostly what we've done so far is help people get job interviews.
Mm-hmm.
Because often what we find is somebody is making $8 or $9 an hour. And if all they really need is like $13 an hour and they could afford to like get a roommate and move out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they just either don't think they qualify for any $13 an hour jobs or they don't know. And I have a lot of volunteers who have contacted me and they either own companies or they're high up in companies where they have some sway and that have jobs like this, you know. And so I can get them all I tell people is, look, I can get you an interview. I can't make you any promises beyond that. I'm not, you know, the hiring manager for these companies, but I'll do everything I can to help you, you know, land this job. Maybe a person only needs a friend. I've been contacted, I believe, on two occasions so far by members of the LGBT community who didn't know another LGBT person in real life. Okay, you know, they lived in some small town in Utah where they probably did know, but they just didn't know that they knew.
Mm-hmm.
And the only LGBT people that they knew were online, and they had no friends, and they had nobody to talk to. And on two occasions, we've been able to put them into contact with other LGBT people in their community. I had a BYU student who was just really suffering through BYU, and I believe he has one semester left, and he didn't know who he could trust at BYU to talk to, of course, because he doesn't want to say something to the wrong person. And I put him in touch with somebody who I trust greatly there in the Provo area, and that they were able to go and have coffee one day, and the person I put him in touch with was able to tell him where he could go to some meetings to find support. So it could be something as simple as that. I mean, I think, you know, the biggest thing we would ever do would be maybe get contacted by a current missionary who wants out. That hasn't happened yet, but I suppose that would be like the most dramatic thing we would ever do. And I don't even know how we would do it, but
that would be intense.
You know, we did help somebody who was suicidal, and that was actually probably the first person that we helped. And I was able to talk to this person on the phone, and basically, you know, I guess talk them down from the ledge, if you will, and get them through to the next day. And eventually, with the help of one of our volunteers who is actually also a moderator on the ex-Mormon subreddit, we were able to get them in touch with the local ex-Mormon group, and we were able to get one of them to actually be with her for a couple of days, you know, to be, you know, sort of say, hey, I'm here to be with you in person as long as you need it. Good. And as far as I know, she's fine now. You know, I probably should follow up with her. I haven't followed up with her recently, but so, yeah, that's just kind of an overview of what we can do. And I don't know where this is going to go, Christy. I feel at times that I've bitten off more than I can chew, to be perfectly honest with you.
Well, I appreciate your honesty. It is a huge project.
It is, and I do hope people realize that it is, you know, it's not like I have an unlimited amount of time with my life, and I try to dedicate as much time to this as possible. I suppose I'm lucky in the sense that we haven't been overridden yet with requests for help, but we do get, I would say, on an average, once a week, new requests for some sort of help.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely try to do everything I can to help them. And if anybody feels like I haven't done enough to help them, I would hope that they, if they hear this, that they would reach out to me again and let me know that they still are in need of some assistance. But yeah, if it ever does become to the point where we start getting bombarded, I'm definitely gonna, in order for it to survive, I'm definitely gonna need help. And I'm sure that there's going to be people that will be willing to step up to the plate and help me with that. I mean, so far our volunteers have been really, really open to helping in any way they can. So I'm sure somebody would step up to be in an admin position, because, you know, one of the things also that I've made clear about this from day one, and anybody who's helped me out so far, this is not a vehicle for anybody to make money from,
right?
Including myself. Mm-hmm. I will never make a penny from the Underground Handcart Company. I do not want to, and I never will. Mm-hmm. And nobody will ever will, as long as I have control over that. That is not what this is about. This is not going to become anybody's full-time job. And so we must be able to get to a point where no matter how many requests we have enough volunteers on hand to be able to handle the load.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Well, I have a hope in our Mormon people, and including our former Mormon, post-Mormon, you know, yeah, cultural Mormon people, that, you know, we're good at putting our shoulder to the wheel.
Yes, if I could give one quick shout out, and mm-hmm. I'll end on this Underground Handcart Company. You just kind of reminded me of something. For any active Mormons, that don't be afraid to reach out to me at the Underground Handcart Company. I don't bite, even though maybe if you've read my Reddit post, you think I do. I don't. And we actually have a couple of active Mormons that have signed up to be volunteers, because even though they believe in the church, they see the need, they maybe know somebody who's in a similar situation and they don't agree with, and they realize that as much as they love the church, there is a need for this. And I even have, I believe, two, people who have never been Mormon who have signed up that live in heavily Mormon communities and wanted to help.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So nobody should be afraid of reaching out to me. I will not turn you away because you are a believing member.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you for clarifying that, Ryan. And I will put the link. I will embed it in this the blog post associated with this podcast. And
there's a Facebook page too. That's probably the best way to get a hold of me, if you send me a message through the Facebook page. There's a public Facebook page that's simply titled Underground Handcart Company.
Okay, I'll add that link for sure.
Okay.
All right. Well, Ryan, thank you so much coming on, and I've learned a lot. And
all right. I enjoyed it. I really did. I enjoyed the conversation.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Ryan. Hope you have a good night.
Thanks for joining us today on Mormon Transitions. If you enjoyed this episode, please help us make more like it by becoming a subscriber at mormontransitions.org. Music for this episode was provided by Iris Dement.
Some say they're going to a place called glory, and I ain't saying it ain't a fact. But I've heard that I'm on the road to purgatory, and I don't like the sound of that. Well, I believe in love and to live my life accordingly. To let the mystery be. Everybody is wondering what and where they all came from. Everybody is worried about where they're gonna go.